This is Women's Rights, a podcast about women's ordination, written and produced by students at Smith College. Hi, I'm Sadie.
I'm Brynja.
I'm Allison.
And I'm Izzy. We're your hosts for this episode of Women's Rights.
This season, we're exploring the story of women's ordination in Reconstructionist Judaism, the United Methodist Church, the Insight Meditation Society, and the Presbyterian Church USA. To do so, we've interviewed women in each of these traditions, talking about women's ordination, activism, and the experience of being ordained.
In this episode, we're going to look at Reconstructionist Judaism. We're going to interview two rabbis about their experiences growing up Jewish, being ordained in the Reconstructionist movement, and any obstacles that come with being women.
Reconstructionist Judaism was founded by Mordecai Kaplan and his synagogue in the 1920s and was established as a denomination in 1968. The denomination ordained its first woman, Rabbi Sandy Sasso, in 1974. The tradition is progressive and focuses on Judaism's evolution alongside modern thought with an emphasis on community, inclusivity, and tikkun olam, which is the Jewish idea of social justice and means repairing the world.
We first asked our interviewees about how they came to be part of the Reconstructionist movement. We'll first hear from Rabbi Rachel Kipnis, a recent graduate of the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College as of 2024.
I grew up a Reform Jew and was very much involved in Reform Judaism. I'd say just until I left my family's house, and then it sort of turned into a wider exploration of different denominations of liberal Judaism, like Jewish movements in the U.S. I was living in New Orleans where there were not a lot of rabbis that would talk to me or my friends because of our politics. And I found Reconstructionist rabbis who were really excited to talk to me. And after I met a few more of them, I learned that the Reconstructionist movement was like really early on to ordain women, and in particular queer women.
We asked the same question to Rabbi Linda Holtzman, a professor at the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, who was ordained there in 1979.
I grew up in a Jewish family. I was actively involved in a conservative synagogue for my entire growing up experience. I did as much as I could of involvement in Jewish life through the conservative movement. At the time, the conservative movement was not ordaining women, and there were other issues that I felt at the time that the conservative movement was not very flexible. So it didn't involve any kind of conversion for me to, you know, leave the conservative movement. I stayed Jewish. But I was searching when I was in college for something that was more progressive, more open, more ready to change than the conservative movement. And I wasn't really a Reform Jew, which was the other liberal movement at the time. I loved ritual. I loved Hebrew. I loved everything that I had gotten from my conservative background. But I had a much broader understanding of God. I had a broader understanding of community, of interfaith relations, of many different things, including the role of women. So when I was in college, I learned about the Reconstructionist movement, and it happened that the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College was right up the block from Temple University, which is where I went to school. And that one could, in fact, you had to, in order to become a rabbi there at the time, go to rabbinical school and also do graduate work, preferably at Temple, because you could walk back and forth, you know, from school to school. And I decided it was the right fit for me and wound up there.
We next asked our interviewees about the experiences they did or did not have with women in Reconstructionist Judaism that shaped their call to become a rabbi.
I don't think of it as a call particularly. I think of it more as a fit. It's like it just fit. And I mean, my experience of women as I was growing up in the Jewish community was that all of the rabbis were men, that all of the Jewish leaders were men, and that the teachers in religious schools and Hebrew schools were women.
Rabbi Holtzman went on to describe an impactful experience during her bat mitzvah, a Jewish coming-of-age ceremony for young women. Fun fact, bat mitzvahs were first created by the founder of Reconstructionist Judaism.
The rabbi said to me, "So, what do you want to be when you grow up?" And I thought, "Oh, I want to do what you do." And somewhere deep down, I knew that that was the wrong answer because women couldn't do that. So I said, "I want to be a Hebrew school teacher." But that sort of stuck with me afterwards. When I was in college, it was the very beginning, really, of the women's movement, of kind of second wave of feminism, right? And I was very taken with the idea that women really could not only do anything, but could change the things that they did. So that women in leadership didn't just mean, oh, a woman now can be a this, but that the this would look different because women were in it. And I
Next, we'll hear from Rabbi Kipnis, who referenced someone we are very familiar with.
Rabbi Linda Holtzman, who was my teacher. I met her and I was like, am I going to be a rabbi? I don't know. There's so many other things. There's so many things I could choose. She like really cracked something open for me. The theology that she offered, like that there was a God that could be more. I think I always knew that God was more than like a man sitting up in the sky, but she like drew it out with her words and with her performance of prayer. I was like, I don't know what this path as like a woman in the rabbinate necessarily will look like for me, but here's someone who like talks like me and prays like me and thinks like me, and she's older and surviving. So let me go see what it's like. And then the other person that I want to like Rabbi Desti class. I watched her work with young people, with me as a young person, and like treat me with so much dignity and kindness. And like I knew, you know, when you're in high school, all you want is someone to be like, yeah, you totally know what you're talking about. You know, she just really like she was our everyone's best cheerleader. And that like seed has certainly was certainly planted inside of me.
We also asked the interviewees to describe what the process of ordination looked like for them specifically. Each rabbi was ordained in a different era, and as a result, their experiences differ. We'll first hear from Rabbi Holtzman.
It was complicated. It was complicated in a lot of ways. The first thing, when I graduated from rabbinical school, my first job out in the world was in a conservative synagogue. And there had not been women in as rabbis in conservative synagogues because there were no conservative women rabbis. So I got a huge amount of press, like huge amount of press. Like at the time, being, I was in a bunch of magazines. I was on a national TV show. I was on the cover of the New York Times. That was the way you got press, right? I did a million different radio talk shows. It was in some ways exciting. Like, oh boy, look at this. And I wasn't the first woman rabbi. There were other women rabbis who were both Reform and Reconstructionist, but I was the first to have a congregation of her own. And the fact that it was in a conservative synagogue, I think, really struck people as, oh, this is worth publicizing. And I just got so much publicity. For me personally, I had been married to a man and I was like recently just divorced and I was coming out as a lesbian. And this was all happening personally and kind of quietly in my life. I wasn't being open in the world yet. It was 1979, and I could not have gotten any jobs anywhere if I had been open about being queer at the time. And that was all happening. And then I was getting all of this press and starting to work in this synagogue, and it was completely overwhelming, just completely overwhelming.
Next, we'll hear from Rabbi Kipnis, who explained multiple aspects of the process.
I moved to Philadelphia to go to the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College. So I moved to this place where I knew like three people. I'm still here. So It was a blessing to get to land here. But I moved to this new city and had met a couple of people in my program, but largely just like spent the first year of my program like really adjusting to the decision that I'd made in the new place. And I had to really I questioned all the time whether or not I had made the right decision.
Rabbi Kibnis also explained how she was the daughter of a rabbi and grew up going to Jewish day school, which affected how she approached rabbinical school.
I think I thought that the academics of the rabbinical school were going to be a breeze for me. And they weren't. I was super challenged in the classroom in ways that I like was really hard as an adult.
Her ordination also occurred at a unique time.
In terms of the process of ordination, I also was in school during COVID shutdown. And then the uprisings that were in the summer of 2020 were a big part of my, those were the things that I wanted to be spending my time on rather than doing my homework. And yeah, that was like a point of struggle for me. Like I had to get clear about, was I gonna like keep going through this program when the world was on fire and I could be with my other hat on organizing and this other realm of my work that I do as a movement chaplain, which is a whole other conversation.
Additionally, we asked the interviewees if they faced any resistance on their path to becoming rabbis. We'll first hear from Rabbi Holtzman.
So I've faced resistance at the time around being a lesbian more than being a woman. Like, because in the Reconstructionist movement and in the Reform movement, it was by then considered really a good thing to become a woman. And there were congregations that were opening up and were, wanted to work with women. And it felt as if, yeah, this was really representing a change that felt good and important. But being a lesbian was another story. And that's where the resistance was at first.
She explained a story about an openly gay man who applied to the Reconstructionist Rabbinical College, whom the college denied.
And this was the most progressive rabbinical school at the time of any. So it was, I was pretty devastated. Like, how could my colleagues, how could the other people who I saw as people who cared about me and cared about my becoming a rabbi, how could they be saying this? But they were, and ultimately we didn't, the school did not accept him. So when I graduated, I thought I better not be open, because what like if the school that ordained me wouldn't accept me now, this is not okay.
Next, we will hear from Rabbi Kipnis, who talks about resistance from both generational differences and learning differences.
I got a lot of like very paternalistic, like people much older than me and with much more power than me sitting me down and telling me to behave different or stop doing X, Y, and Z politically. I also remember a couple of conversations around certain topics where I didn't even open my mouth and teachers were speaking at me. I mean, the other resistance is that it is a like fairly inaccessible program academically. So as I said before, like I learned a lot of things about myself as a learner, which is like I will say also very connected to my gendered socialization. Like I grew up in school where no one was like, you have like ADHD and probably dyslexia. They were like, you are pushing through and working so hard. Good job, girl. And then I got to grad school and had so much more of an awareness of myself and was looking around and was like, oh my God, this is taking me so much longer than my classmates. And it's not for lack of trying. And so, yeah, that feels like an important one to add, the way that we get like sort of passed over in finding accommodations and support for women.
Furthermore, we asked the rabbis if there were ways that being a woman affects their careers in ways that don't affect men. Did their unique identities allow them to change the roles they were in? We will first hear from Rabbi Holtzman.
Yeah, there are ways that being a woman rabbi, that being a lesbian rabbi, definitely make a difference in my career, no question. One of them, when for me at least, growing up as a girl is just different from what it meant to the kids who were growing up as boys. And for me, I think that was a good thing because it gave me a different perspective, neither better nor worse, but different. And I saw what it meant to not be allowed to have equal rights. And I saw what it meant to need to stand up and push for your voice to be heard fully and completely in a community. And that made a big difference.
Next, Rabbi Kipnis.
I mean, there's like a very obvious piece, which is that like people are more willing and sort of even without knowing of all genders, like more quick to share like hard like trauma or whatever is like hard happening in their life. Like it's both the blessing of it and this other heavy thing of like the blessing of getting to watch people's face and like watch them at the beginning of their journey, either into Jewish practice for the first time ever, because I was like a window into this whole other world, or a return back to Jewish practice, as it were, for a lot of people who left because of queerness or Zionism or whatever it may be. And then there's the other part where like I get put into certain roles as rabbi, as rabbi as caretaker or rabbi as listener, which are certainly things that I love doing. And it is just so obvious how the division of labor happens and how queer women are like holding the bulk of the emotional labor of the progressive Jewish world. It's both my truest honor to be able to be in those spaces and support the world building that we're doing. And yeah, it's just disproportionate.
We finally asked the interviewees about what obstacles they think still need to be overcome to achieve a sense of equality within Reconstructionist Judaism. We will first hear from Rabbi Holtzman, who had two very different answers to that question.
The one is race, where there are some rabbinical students and rabbis who are black or brown or just not white. And it's always like in the great minority, which is true for the Jewish world, but I think more so than is even true for the Jewish world, because coming into a school that's overwhelmingly white and that doesn't completely understand the experience of, like, for example, a black Jew is hard. And one has to have a lot of strength and the willingness to put up with 8 billion microaggressions in order to do well, even in a school that tries extremely hard on that issue, but I think needs to grow even more. And the second area is around Israel and Zionism. Like, my vision is a Jewish world where we respect each other, where we talk to each other about what our realities are, what our understanding is, and we can all accept each other. Where if we are people of good faith who care about having the best for Israel and for Palestine and for, humanity, that we are. And that being able to trust each other, that we could come to different conclusions. I don't want people to be clones of where I am politically, but to be open to knowing that I'm not a destructive force. I have a different vision, and that I can deeply respect people. I mean, some of my best friends are very strong Zionists, and I love them. And we can talk about it, and it feels really important to be able to. So that's the other area where the rabbinical school tries, but I think needs to work harder at it.
Next, we will hear from Rabbi Kipnis, who says,
"We need to not come after each other for having political disagreements." Part of having a program, a school that prioritizes women and queer people means we're going to come in with real strong opinions. I mean, maybe not in all cases. I also don't want to discriminate against like a quiet woman who wants to listen more than talk. I love those people. But there's work to do on accepting people who have different politics than you in a space. And I think that there's internal work to do. Funders can't threaten training programs or movements over certain like students or rabbi or ordained rabbis. There's that whole side of like economic access to training programs that would bring in, you know, would train in and out people of different experiences and different backgrounds and train up and in people who have a higher tolerance for political disagreement, things like that. So there's that like realm that I think an obstacle that could be overcome in the financial area.
In a time full of distrust and separation, both rabbis agreed the world needs to listen to each other. We can feel like we're shouting at each other, but if everyone would take a moment and talk with each other, the world would be a better place.
Thank you for listening.
That concludes our podcast for today. Tune in next time and we'll look at ordained women in the United Methodist Church.
Our theme music was Bird Therapist by Craig MacArthur, used by an attribution non-commercial share alike Creative Commons license. Special thanks to Rabbis Linda Holtzman and Rachel Kipnis. Also, thanks to Dan Bennett and Meredith Richter of the Smith Learning Research and Technology team. And thanks to the Religion Department that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College. Tune in next time on Women's Rights.